Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to another Friday night edition of Let's Talk for Org. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Thank you for joining us for what should be another great show. A reminder, we do not own the rights for the music you just heard. Also, we ask you to please click tag and share. Tell someone Let's Talk for Org is on the air. And tonight, we're talking about the Aaron Dean trial. He was found guilty of manslaughter. The only two charges that were on the table was murder or manslaughter. And manslaughter basically implies that he was reckless. A lot of people don't agree with that. A lot of people believe he was very pointed in his aim to shoot and kill Tatiana Jefferson, and there was nothing reckless about that. But those are some facts that are debated depending upon who you're talking to. We're also going to talk about the fact that Dean was found not to be someone that his own defense team could say was a nice guy. They put his parent, his mother up there. They put his sister up there. They put his brother up there. They put a training instructor on the stand. But no one made you feel like Dean was a nice guy. We're going to talk about that tonight. We're going to talk about the fact that Maddie Parker and Chris Nettles will have to go before the judge in January for disobeying a gag order that was put in place by the former judge, Judge Hagerman. We're going to talk about the fact that Manuel Mata was arrested today for refusing to be sworn in on a case he had nothing to do with. Also, we're going to talk about Anthony LaSalle, who they mistook for Manuel Mata today, and he was forced to be sworn in again. He's a local activist. Doesn't have anything to do with the case, but he was sworn in today. A lot of people believe just so that he will not be present in the court moving forward. We're going to talk about Dean's youngest sister. She testified today. Also said she was a police officer. She seemed very cold, very detached, assumed, almost as though her and Dean are very similar in personality type. And we'll talk about that. We're going to talk about the training instructor who dealt with Dean on his second phase of training. He said that Dean was not very good with people. We're going to talk about the fact that Dean's mother almost appeared to be rambling, trying to save her son from going to jail. She almost appeared to be almost disoriented at certain points in terms of her testimony. She didn't seem to follow the questions very well. We're going to talk about Judge Gallagher. Was he out of line today? A lot of people are talking about filing complaints about what he did to Manuel Mata. Also, we're going to talk about did the defense team fail to prove Dean was a good guy? We want to go in depth on that because we're in the sentencing phase right now, and they want us to believe that this person should get probation for taking another person's life for absolutely no reason at all. So we're going to go into depth about that tonight. And then we're going to talk about whether Zion Carr, James Smith, and Tatiana Jefferson were chosen by God to bring change to Fort Worth. We know that Aaron Dean is the first officer who's ever been convicted of manslaughter in Tarrant County's history. So were those three people chosen by God to bring change to Fort Worth? You know, my theme song every week says the change is going to come. I'm not playing it for nothing, y'all. It's because I believe that's what's going to happen. So that's why it's played every week. And also another thing I want to talk about, probation. The charge of manslaughter carries 2 to 20, with probation also being an option. But most people feel probation is off the table. So we're going to talk about that tonight. So listen, let me open up the phone line. I see some people that I'm very familiar with, and I'm going to open up their phone lines tonight. Good evening, Christopher Marino. How are you?
Good. How are you doing, Carrie?
Good. I see Reggie Ruffin. Good evening, Reggie. How are you? Oh, I lost that person. I'm sorry. Adrian Smith, good evening.
Thank you, Carrie. Good evening to you.
Good evening. You know, y'all, there's a lot going on with this particular trial. And, you know, it's almost turning into a circus. And I really don't know how else to put that other than that's what it feels like. Does it feel like that to y'all?
I'll go ahead and say real short and quick. I'm trying to stay concise and calm today because this is overwhelming.
yeah, it is.
I'm going to try to choose the right word. What I feel that the truth that is coming to light has, and this is biblical, because, you know, we've seen these issues that we talk about with the police, with George Floyd, and we hear a lot about Breonna Taylor and all of this and all of that. And as far as the national media and the national conversation goes under this, you know, and I'm not downplaying, but there's a unique aspect to this one, you know, and it's nothing to be argued because wrong is wrong and right is right. But this is a unique situation because Tatiana, in a lot of the stories that we get, you know, George Floyd was having a legitimate law enforcement encounter. You know, a lot of the stories that we get are the legitimate law enforcement encounters. But this case, it hurts my heart that the media hasn't beat the drum to death on this because this is a very powerful and impactful case that could cultivate change if it was getting the right kind of. Because this was an absolute This was not a legitimate law enforcement encounter. And what I feel is that the powers that be in Tarrant County, this is becoming an epicenter. And I feel that it's just like this primordial environment that's ready to be the big bang that explodes. But the powers that be are being put in purgatory right now. I feel that the regime that we have here in Tarrant County, and I won't say specific names, I mean, because that just incites people. We know who they are, you know, this Boss Hog. We've got this new rendition of the Boss Hog, Bull Connor regime, and, you know, it's crossed the – I just hope that people will understand, you know, we have this conversation, and I am totally empathetic, sympathetic, and I'm ready to have the conversation on the issues of race. We all know the history. I know that.
Yeah.
I acknowledge that. But I was in this conversation tonight, I would just like to say the healthy thing to say that in the greater sense, this is prophecy being revealed. This is the Bible that we all know as Christian people, that this is like where we start in 2 Timothy, where, you know, this inversion, God starts giving people to the depraved mind. So I would just encourage people to feel that we have crossed the Rubicon. It's gone beyond race. This is about basic human dignity and citizenship in this country.
You know what? I would agree with that. The things that are occurring in Tarrant County and Fort Worth right now really does feel like, you know, we're dealing with reprobate. I mean, and it, for anybody who does not understand what reprobate is, the Bible speaks of a time when, you know, you can go so far wrong that you're on your own. And so God has just basically taken his hands off you, and you believe what's right is wrong, and also you believe what's wrong is right. And so it seems like a lot of the decisions that are being made in our city and our town is almost being done by reprobate. I mean, people who just have no heart, no conscience, and they're just doing whatever they feel, which is scary. But that's
in the name of God. That's why we heard. Yeah. I'll sit there and say, and I'm not trying to be hypocritical. I'm not trying to be. I believe judgment is a good thing. I'm not condemning the Dean family, you know. I'm not the ultimate king of judgment. That's Christ coming back. But the reprobate is a really good word for what we saw on there today. And what is so so terrible to me is that they do it with the theme of Christianity. And
well, I agree.
I try to stay out of the spirit of offense, but I'm calling that out.
I agree. And, you know, listen, I typically do a disclaimer on shows like this, and I forgot tonight. Listen, the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Let's Talk Fort Worth, the host, or any advertisers. But that said, the floor is open. Say whatever you want to say. Everybody is pissed off. And what we don't want to see is – if you found him guilty of manslaughter, that says you saw he did something wrong. So don't turn around and play everybody like they're stupid and then say, but he deserves probation. Because really, if you do that, that just really just means the only thing that he's going to be penalized from is he won't be able to be a police officer anymore. And so I don't think that's the verdict that people are looking for. So I'm just going to say y'all need to be very careful in Tarrant County about what you all are doing. Because the tension in this city, I was downtown yesterday evening after the crowd left, and I was standing in front of the building with the other people in the media, and y'all, be honest with you, it was an eerie feeling down there. It was kind of like it was cold, first of all, but besides that, it was a stillness in the air, and the only noise you could really hear was a helicopter in the sky. But it just had this eerie feeling like something's about to pop off. And so I just really wonder, you know, is this city, is this county, are they ready for that? And is one person worth that? And I'll say, Adrian, what do you think?
Hey, Carrie, in regards to your the opening question, I would say, for one, regarding the media, thank the Most High that cameras were allowed into the courtroom. Audio was allowed because what that did, everything has been put on the table regarding Tarrant County and how it operates. So for all the people, when you're talking about it, and people can be dismissive, or, you know, you had the people who uphold law enforcement to the highest degree. Law enforcement cannot do no wrong in this given society. And when you speak up, we know every time you speak up regarding law enforcement, something, it's always you against law enforcement. We know the media ran. We know the media ran with the defunding the police narrative, and we all of that was going against, said to be going against law enforcement, they ran with it. We know the media has a tendency to, it's very divisive. The media is very divisive in its coverage. One thing I can say about, and I can go on a record and say, WFA, I watch it a lot, because when I watch WFAA, I don't get a sense of they trying to take you somewhere. They just reporting. They keep it real mild. I think they really do consider who's watching. But any other station, it's all about sensationalization. They trying to get that So thankful. Yeah. The cameras were there. I will also say this. Darkness doesn't like to be interrupted. Wickedness doesn't like to be exposed. We speak to the spiritual aspect of this. When you say what you felt, there's darkness. Mm-hmm. Darkness doesn't like to be interrupted. It wants to continue on being dark, operating in the hearts of men the way it operates, keeping us separated and divided, you know, which if we're separated and divided, it keeps us separated from the Most High. But so on and so forth. So what you felt was real. What you felt for real was real. So, but as far as where we are now, it needed to happen. You already posed a certain question that's going to bring us into another aspect of this discussion. I'm pretty sure some people just hearing you saying that last question. If spiritual people understand that last question you asked, but those who are aboard of the spirit, their mindset might go somewhere else. But what you felt is because you are connected in a spiritual sense that it's not just natural, but it is spiritual. So,
It's huge. I mean, and you know, and the thing is, y'all, listen, it was so huge that I decided to get from down there last night. I really didn't even feel safe. I mean, on the way home, I was actually scared because I felt like what was in the atmosphere that I was feeling, it felt like something bad was going to pop off. And that's just about the best way that I could put it. And so when the rest of the media had gotten their shots and were packing up, Carrie packed up too, because I thought whatever's going on, I don't want any part of it. That's just that simple. Let me go to 214-725. Good evening, you're on Let's Talk 4. 214-725.
Hi, Carrie. This is Attorney Billy Clark. How are you?
Fine, Billy. How are you, Attorney Billy
Clark? Good, I'm sorry. I didn't get a chance to catch the beginning of your question.
We just talked about everything concerning the trial. Those were just some of the highlights that I mentioned, but everything's on the table.
Okay, yeah. Just from one of the things that I was thinking about today as I was watching the jury deliberations, is how the whole notion with that probation's on the table, and, you know, we really didn't, well, I wouldn't say we as a whole, but a lot of people didn't realize until now that was going to be available for a manslaughter. And I think from a legal perspective, that's something that, you know, we tell our clients and those kind of things up front, but I think this community should have been briefed from the prosecution standpoint from the very beginning, because that's going to determine how, number one, your case in chief. And I'm not pointing fingers at the prosecution at all. I just think a little bit more could have been done to show that this was indeed a murder and not just a manslaughter that could end up in a probation. So that's one of the things I wanted to really kind of hit.
Well, let me ask you that. So you're saying that the way they kind of put probation in there, they should have put it in there differently, or it's typically done differently than the way they did it?
Well, no, I think it just should have been it should have been out there where the public would have known in the very beginning that, okay, if the jury considers manslaughter, then with manslaughter comes the option for we call it regular probation because it's not deferred if he's convicted. So the option to have regular probation. So what that would do is that would empower the state's, I guess, their evidence, and they'll be able to stack their evidence a little bit better, call in more witnesses, more experts, so that they can assure that now we're not just looking for a manslaughter. We want murder. And at the end of the day, I'm thankful we did get a conviction because at one point I was nervous. When he testified, when he decided to take the stand, Mr. Dean, I kind of knew, okay, that's going to be the icing on the cake for the state's case because now the state could make up in some of the deficiencies that they had at the beginning of the case and kind of play catch up, if you will.
So let me ask you this. When you saw the psychologist basically describe Aaron Dean as, and I'm trying to find my notes on it, y'all, because, listen, it was crazy the things that he said, and then yet we see Aaron Dean as the police officer. But he said some very telling things about his personality type being narcissistic, that he was, you know, he had a superiority complex, you know, that he was grandiose in the way that he carried himself or in his thinking. So, and then he said that Dean was not fit to be a police officer and even failed him on the psychological test. So what kind of weight do you think that will carry?
I think that will carry, I would say, right in the middle on that because you got to look at in the punishment phase, they're looking at a whole lot more than your particular act on that given day. They're looking at your life. They're looking at your character. They're looking at whether or not you've been in trouble before. And if you have been in trouble, what kind of trouble have you been in? And then at the end of the day, they are looking at the fact that this guy, as dangerous of a person as he is, he decided to become a police officer. So that's what they're looking at. Now, from a state standpoint, and, you know, I'm a criminal defense attorney, so, but in this particular matter, because this hurts me and my friends, I'm really good friends with the family, I can see it from another light. I can see it from the fact that this individual is, I want to call him something else, but I'm going to be real nice tonight. He's something else. And that psychological report just highlights the fact that this guy was a ticking time bomb. And what I would have done.
Let me elaborate on that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me put that in context, y'all, because I found my notes. It basically said, and this was Kyle Clayton, who's a psychologist, and he testified to the fact that he had given him a PAI test, which stands for Personality Assessment Inventory. And basically he said that he found that Dean had personality traits of grandiosity, domineering, narcissistic, and superiority. He said that Dean had given himself a 9 out of a possible 10 grading himself. He said Dean had said he would have given himself a 10 out of 10 hadn't he done some stupid things in the past that pissed some people off. He went on to say that Aaron Dean felt that one of his flaws was being too messy. Now, I'm going to come back to that. Y'all know where I'm going with that. So that basically Dean told the psychologist that he thought that he could fly commercial planes based on the fact that he had played video games about flying planes. Dean had two incidents in his 20s, basically, where he had a situation with air guns soft guns, but they would not let that be admitted in court, y'all, but I thought that was very, very telling. And police were called on both of those incidents. Dean also in his 20s had a situation where he had touched Elizabeth Turner, that was brought up in court. And Dean applied for the police department in Reno, Nevada, Grand Prairie, and the Fort Worth Police Department. Dean had an extensive history with guns and was considered very proficient with guns. And he said the demon showed a problem with verbal aggression. And he said he would not be good for police work, according to that psychologist. So that said, Attorney Billy Clark, you still say the same thing?
I think his psychological background should have been a factor. I mean, they should have been all over that from the very beginning, because it shows that if somebody's been, they've been told by authorities in their chain that we don't recommend you to do this exact job that we're trying to hire you for. Mm-hmm. Somebody needs to know about that. Because now that can change the whole, to be charged with murder versus manslaughter, it goes to the mind, the mens rea. What was the mind? So if your mind is already deficient because of whatever diagnosis you have or undiagnosed behavior you have, there's something altering your state that could trigger something to make you be in a position where you're not going to do what a reasonable person would and knock on a door and announce yourself as the police, but you're going to go rogue, and now you're going to transition from being that officer that we deserve and that we want to knock on a door to ask us if we need help versus the one that's going to go on attack mode to somebody in their own home. So that's where I have a huge problem with.
Okay, so you posted on one of your posts the penal code for manslaughter. So tell us the difference between manslaughter and murder in Texas.
Well, in Texas, doesn't have all the first degree, second degree. Texas has capital murder, of course, which is something punishable by up to death. And then underneath that is murder. Most things fall in the murder range when it has to do with intent or knowledge. You had knowledge that this is going to happen, I intended to go out and shoot somebody. That's murder. It's all about that mind. What was your mind? What was your intent? And then, of course, manslaughter is if you do something reckless, like what he's been found guilty of. But the line is can be blurry if you don't clearly establish that intent. If you can't establish that intent and you don't have a lesser charge, then you can get a not guilty. So having that lesser included charge allows at least a conviction.
Okay.
And then under that, you can have, it's called criminally negligent homicide. If you're negligent and you cause the death of someone, that's only punishable by a state jail felony.
Okay, so when you heard them say manslaughter, did you think it fit manslaughter, or did you think it was really murder?
What I went in was hoping and praying for and thinking everything was going to happen, it was going to be a murder. But once I saw that the state's case, I immediately thought in my mind, okay, this is going to be manslaughter, period. Because if we were, like, the state was playing catch-up. They were playing defense mode. They have to bring the game. They have to bring everything and tie him to that as someone who intended to do it because of, number one, it could be because of their psychological background, being overzealous, being a dangerous person. So I kind of prepared myself for manslaughter as the case went along.
I think what I disagree with is I heard him say when they asked him, was there anything behind the Tatiana Jefferson? And he said, I don't know. And I think Dale Smith said, so you mean you took a shot and you didn't know if anything was behind the Tatiana Jefferson? And he said, I took a very pointed shot. Either he said, I took an aim shot. I think the word was aim. I took an aim shot. So that doesn't seem reckless to me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry, somebody said something?
Can I say, Chris?
Because sure. I want to ask Clark, I think we can, I can push it out there really quick. I'm not an attorney, but I'm deeply researched. Yeah, this is one of the most unusual trials, because almost what you have essentially is that the officers' conduct when they went through that gate, they trespassed the Fourth Amendment protections. Mm-hmm. They pulled out their guns. That, by the letter of the law, by the objective letter of the law, that's engaging in deadly conduct. I mean, that's in principle of law, that's criminal trespass and that's deadly conduct. And Darch and both of them did it, but I'm not going to get into that. But when you have any other non-cop offender, if there is a firearm involved and they aim a firearm, that's automatic intent, knowing intent. And that when Dean took the stand, the state set it up to hit a home run, because they got Dean to say, articulate exactly. They said, and you knew your weapon was that your firearm was a deadly weapon, right? And they said, and you knew that it would cause death when you pointed it at that window. I mean, that's deadly conduct when you point a window, a weapon at a habitation, that whether you know somebody's in there or not. I mean, so by the letter of the law, he was already committing a crime. So that steps you right into murder too, without the intent. But on the other edge of it is, they got him on the stand and they went tat, 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 tat. They hit all three elements of murder in about a second exchange with Aaron D, and he absolutely confessed it. And therefore, you know, you can play with nuance and everything about recklessness, but the state let the defense play the recklessness thing all the way. And they didn't. There were so many times when they could have objected. And, you know, about the, just for today, thing about the airsoft guns, there's a concept in the rules of evidence called the probative versus the prejudicial weight of the evidence. Mm-hmm. And it's, I think it's 403 or something like, I don't remember, but.
Yeah, it's 403.
And in this principle, I do understand that testimony or those facts are highly prejudicial. However, that is precise. That is like the most perfect, the relevancy of that as evidence that the state needed. And they just let Bob Gill set up and say, he's done it like three or four times. He throws the 403 and the judge sustains it. And the state doesn't even come up with a response. The state could have argued, Your Honor, we're talking about a use of a firearm. It's highly relevant in the narrative that you need the state to play out to do what you need to do as a prosecutor. I mean, I think that if the state would have made the argument and put Gallagher on the spot, but Gallagher's the puppet master here. That's what I think.
What are you saying, Billy? And then Billy, can you hang out with us a little while longer and let us take some more calls? But can you answer
question?
No problem. Okay.
I sure will.
Can you answer what he just said? Or respond?
Hello?
Do you have a response to what he just said, Billy?
No, I mean, I was listening to him, and it's funny that he mentioned about the evidence. On my Facebook post today, there's a post on there, and I just shared it from 7 years ago, talking about 403. It's actually a federal rule. I'm not sure what the Texas rule equivalent is. But, you know, evidence, the thing about this whole case, and I'm kind of re-looking at it just to see if I would have done anything differently.
Mm.
What I'm seeing is that if you're the state and you're going to prosecute a police officer and you already know it's very difficult to get a murder charge, not impossible. I mean, it does happen. We've seen it here recently, but it's unpopular in certain counties. You should bring everything that you have, every witness, anybody that can impeach another witness or the defense theory. Anybody, even from the academy, from the police academy, Mm-hmm. What kind of grades did this person get? Let's talk about that in the detail. Mm-hmm. And not to wait to see if the defense is going to take the stand, because I'm sure the state had no idea he was going to take the stand. Mm-hmm. So don't wait for all those things. Be on the be aggressive when it comes to justice. And you know, that's one of the things I just like, gosh, I cannot get over that.
Hey, can I interject real quick, Carrie, before you go to your next call?
Sure.
Just kind of more or less, I truly believe that the state also factored in that regardless of who sits on that jury panel, you know, we know how it looked in the beginning, but it's not how you start, but it's how you finish, and that covers every aspect of life. But I'll say this. Some people only see police as one thing, as law enforcement. So regardless of all of, you know, the technological understanding, the law aspects, this, that, they don't ask people that, you know, to understand the law, this and that, because they present this stuff to, you know, they present this stuff to us as people. They got to present it to us as like we don't know. We know some people know it. Some people probably know it, don't study, blah, blah. But then there's one people who can care less about the law, unknown the law. Mm-hmm. But I think with some of those in the jury, regardless of what was presented to them, some of them in the back of their mind still deal with the conditioning that he was law enforcement or she was law enforcement. So a lot of people base their judgment off of, well, you know, law, you know, because society teaches us law enforcement has a right, so many rights. Society's afforded law enforcement so many rights that when they do something, it's kind of like, well, no, but he's law enforcement or she was law enforcement. So it makes sense, you know, and that's just my observation on what they were discussing.
I agree. Yo, listen, we're going to go to the phone lines. If you have a question or a comment tonight, the call-in number is 515-605-9321, then press 1 once connected. We're going to 817-946. You've been holding a while. I apologize. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk What Works.
Hello, Karen.
Hey. Hey, Gerald, how you doing? I can barely hear you.
Okay. Maintaining, a little disappointed in what we were viewing today.
Oh, absolutely.
I was in the courtroom. And,
what was the feel in the courtroom? What was the feel in the courtroom for those of us who weren't there?
Yeah. At some point, a little disappointing to me because of the way that things were being transpired. You know, privileged people has privileged ways, you know. And from my standpoint, we can pull the race card all day and half tonight. And if that was a black person, this wouldn't even, I mean, if that was a black person, have done that to a white person, black cop or not, you know, it wouldn't even have went this far. And probation wouldn't even be on the table at all. Mm. I mean, you know, the conviction would have been definitely murder. Mm-hmm. And, you know, religion, yes, it plays a big part in it because that's what's keeping Fort Worth quiet right about now, you know, mm-hmm. with all of this, you know, that's going on. And, you know, the pastors are not. Well, I don't really know exactly where they stand at this point because of the fact that it seems like it would have been a multiple amount of people in the courthouse, around the courthouse, and all, you know, not just to, you know, make it turmoil or anything, but in support.
Mm-hmm.
A white supremacist, well, you know, they hide behind religion. Mm-hmm. So, and then they ask forgiveness, for their wrongness, knowing that this is what's transpiring. So his sister touching him all on the shoulder as she went up there to the stand, coming off the stand, as his mother was speaking and giving all kinds of, you know, enlightenment, his friends or other, you know, giving positive aspects to his character and all of that. But then when you get down to Tatiana's family, they just pretty much just suppress them, shut it down. And that's not right. That's being really biased. So definitely uneven when it comes down to, you know, being a fair trial or at least being fair in the sentencing state.
And just to put an exclamation mark on that, the contrast that we have in this little forget history, the contrast, the irrefutable truth of the matter is you're exactly right. It's undeniable because if you contrast the way that, okay, just let's just use his Dean's sister today, how, you know, they took the jury, they were, the Judge Gallagher was really limiting the scope of what the state could get into. But the contrast here, if you just, let's just go back to James Smith when he was on the stand, okay? They let the freaking, well, I don't forget, was it, I think it was Bob Gill, too, taking all the shots over the bow there. And the state didn't object to anything. And they literally were literally being indignant to him and battering him. And you didn't hear the state defend him. The judge stepped in even without an objection and waved off anything that could be derogatory or prejudicial or insulting to any of the defense witnesses.
I agree. Y'all, we're going back to the phone lines. If you have a question or a comment, the call-in number is 515-605-9321. Then press 1 once connected. If you're on the phone lines already, you have to press 1 in order for me to know that you want me to come to you. But again, the call-in number tonight is 515-605-9321, then press 1 once connected. We're going to 214-206. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Footwork.
Hi. How's everybody doing tonight?
Fine.
Hi.
Taylor Mondick.
Hi. This is Taylor Mondick. Before I, you know, form, I guess, and express my opinions, I have a couple of questions for you guys. And you know, I didn't watch the entire trial like you all did, so forgive me if these questions have already been answered. My first one is, do we know if Mr. Dean, did he ever request to be on the east side or to patrol a certain division, or was he simply answering a phone call that night? Do we know anything about that?
He was assigned to the east side. He was assigned.
Do we know if he was
right?
requested? Yeah.
I don't think that there's anything on record that's been brought up about that. However, what we do have is this pattern of the Fort Worth police officers. If we just go where the unfit people go. I mean, evaluate, and I'm not being personal. But if you really evaluate the personality traits of Darch, if you evaluate the personality traits of John Romer, if you evaluate the personality traits of Courtney Johnson, these guys are the ones who probably failed psychological. I don't know for a fact, but they just have the aura of the same thing as Aaron Dean, and it's bad.
That's why I ask, though, you know, because I feel let's see, you know. They didn't do a great job of making him, I feel like, cold enough, you know, be a murder charge. And this kind of leads into my second question.
We'll listen.
We'll go. Or if he had requested to be over there, it would make a better argument. And so my next question is, what would be the argument for, you know, a murder charge, knowing that you have to show intent? And that is my biggest question is, was this an intentional? Sure, he was unfit. Sure, he had issues in the past. But was it intentional? What do you guys think about that?
Hey, Taylor.
Is that the million-dollar question?
I'm not going to touch the intent part, but I wanted to touch on the first question, and I think Chris hit on it. If you, I would say, and I'm just on the outside looking in, but I base it off of his partner's initial, and she was happy about it when she said this. Now, if you go back and watch it, she was happy when she stated this. This came out of her mouth. She was happy about it. She was gleeful about it. why did you want to work? What side of town? I work on a such. And why did you want to work? She said, yes. She was like enthusiastic when she said she wanted to work on specifically the east side. She specifically wanted to work on the east. He was enthusiastic, and they said, why? She said, because of everything that she's basically guaranteed she's going to get some action. Basically, I'm going to just put in Adrian's layman terms, basically she's going to get some action. So I feel that the Fort Worth police, give or take, they might give them I don't know. Maybe we need somebody in law enforcement. If they're willing to go off a record, they don't have to just go undercover, go off a record, and let us know if you all are given a choice as to which side you are.
Right.
Side of
well, that's very
community
that's,
you
that's
serve in. We need somebody from law.
Yeah.
And I
because the whole goal should be, I mean, and maybe this is just too idyllic in a perfect world, but we don't want to see any action. You know, the less action, the better. And so that's a very interesting thing, Adrian, a point that you brought up. You know, my biggest, like I said, I don't know if I'm ready to express or form an opinion yet, because I just this is I heard, you know, word on the street that, you know, we were going to be peacefully protesting, and I put that in air quotes, regardless of the outcome. And when we live in this kind of world of social justice, sometimes on both sides, it can cloud our judgment. And so it's just such a difficult place to be in. But I'm going to keep listening. You guys are doing awesome.
Thank you.
Can I answer his question? Can I answer his question real quick, Kerry?
Yes,
I won't be too long.
Yes.
So here's the feeling. Here's the sense that I get that I've kind of – I would articulate that there's this subterfuge of a double standard cop versus civilian, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And – that's what we kind of explained, that this whole trial has been that the state and the defense have been talking about general orders and general orders and policies and procedures and training, and that was a complete distraction. Although you got to deal with those facts in some sense, that's on the defense. The state job was to prove what the penal code and the code of criminal procedures state about murder, and that was their job. And all they did was take the cards that the defense dealt, and they followed their lead on their terms.
And
that left them. But to answer it real quick, the intent, we talked about it, I think maybe you weren't listening earlier, but the intent is, if you look at any other, if you were in a crime that's committed with a firearm and you point a firearm at somebody, okay, regardless of whatever reason it is, okay, right there is without – that's the proof. You pulled a firearm that you knew was – and the cops are trained that their firearms is lethal force. So, I mean, if you were wrong
well,
by
that's
the
a good point.
And procedures, and so just by the letter of the law, okay, this manslaughter thing, what people don't understand either is this manslaughter thing that they let go away, if you know how appellate procedure works and if you really diagram the dynamics going on in this trial, having that special instruction, having the lesser included instruction, gives that's going to be the spearhead of his appeal, because if you don't understand, if their obligation was to prove murder, and Dean got on the stand and all of the evidence establishes that his intent was knowing intent. He knew the firearm was a deadly weapon, and he aimed that with the intent to to kill. That's it.
Right.
Any other crime that you've ever seen with the – now, there's intoxication manslaughter. That's because you get drunk and you kind of lose your wit, and you didn't get in – you knew you were doing something wrong by getting intoxicated and driving your vehicle, but you didn't aim your car to kill somebody. You know, and so what happens in the appellate process is they're going to review the trial record, and if the state didn't carry the burden to prove the element of recklessness that goes along with that, if the third thing was the element of recklessness and they didn't go in there, now that evidence is in there, but the state didn't articulate that in their arguments, you know. The appeals court can throw this whole thing out, and in my interpretation of the law, that could be an incurable error, that
you know, it's like a 50-50 toss-up. If the appeals court reversed the conviction, it might get ruled as an acquittal, and it might get remanded for retrial. But that's a big open door for to get off.
Yeah, and that's what we don't want. You know, I mean, good God, you took someone's life, you know, and there should be consequences for that. So I appreciate you clearing that up. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we're going back to the phone line. 682-250. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk What Works.
Hello, Carrie. How you doing?
How you doing?
Pianchi. Hey, I got some questions.
Okay.
Now, it was the neighbor across the street that looked over and seen the door open. And wasn't they the one that reported it?
They were.
Now, why come the neighbor didn't go over across the street and knock and see what was going on?
Mr. James, and I'm not going to try to speak for him, but I'm just going to say what I think I've heard repeatedly. That night, Mr. James was actually asleep, and some of his family members were the first to observe the door. The doors were open. They didn't know why. The house was well lit. You could see in, but you didn't see anybody because they were in the back bedroom. Mr. James actually got up, went across the street to see if he could see what was going on. But he wasn't sure because there was some lawn equipment out. And, again, you didn't see any. He didn't see anybody as he peeked through the doors. So he came back across the street and called police. Now, this is what I will say in his defense. Mr. James did not know what was going on. However, his non-emergency call to police did not say danger, danger, danger. It was, in my opinion, if I were a trained operator, I would have assumed he was saying a welfare check. He said, my neighbor, who's typically, you know, home by this time, her cars are in the yard, you know, I see some lights on, I'm not sure what's going on. I think, you know, somebody probably needs to come out and check.
Was
so,
the police officer in uniform?
Mm-hmm. Who?
Was the police officer shot?
Yes, he was.
Yeah,
and
he was in a patrol car.
No, no. If you don't pull up in front of my house with a patrol car, I don't know what you're in because they didn't pull up in front of the house.
All right.
They
parked. This is a scenario I think should have happened. First, the lady's got a right to have a gun in the house, and the police officer looking in the window seeing that had no business shooting the lady. But also, if I was a cop, I would have pulled up in front of the house and turned on my lights. They got lights and even unmarked cars. Anyway, the lights would have been seen in the house, you know, the reflection and so forth. Also, I would have knocked on the door. But one of the reasons why coming the neighbor didn't go inside, because of the crime that's been going on in the neighborhood. There's a lot of things that contribute to that. Not just a lot of things contribute to that. And you get to a situation where you are.
The neighbor,
I mean, think about it.
The neighbor, someone I consider, was not sure what was going on. It was in the wee hours of the morning. And what he did was call people who were trained to do that. So in his defense, Mr. James called the police non-emergency number saying, come do a welfare check because, you know, I question if everything's okay over here. My neighbor's been sick. You know, even though those are her two cars in the yard, the doors are open. It's 2 o'clock in the morning, 2:30 in the morning. You know, can y'all come and see what's going on? So that's
I'm not blaming him, but I'm saying I look over across the street, my neighbor's door opened at times. I go, hey, Susan, hey, Carrie, you all right? Let me say this. I'm just about done. Suppose it was being burglarized. So it's a lot of possibilities that could have went down, and there's a lot of reasons why come the heightened tensions and the afraidness exists. Now, like I said, the police officer didn't have no business shooting in that woman's window. Because it's okay for her to have a weapon and do whatever she wanted to do with it inside her house. Mm-hmm. So he was in the wrong, as far as I'm concerned, is doing that. But you got to also look at the other things that brings up that type of awareness and not want to get involved in or not want to be here when something happened that's been going on in the neighborhood. So, that's my view.
Oh, my observation. Let me say this, Mr. Pianchi. One, he's a lifelong resident of that community, and that community, like any other community, has its issues. I think the time of the morning, I think the time of the morning was factored in. It wasn't so because if he felt much of a danger to himself, he wouldn't have even walked across the street. So walked over there to get a glance at what was going on. So he wasn't in fear of his community or the possibility of something going on. But I think more or less that community, like any other community, has its issues. Now, I'm gonna leave it at that. But he's a lifelong resident of that community. They even describe him as like the mayor of that community. And I want to know what's the makeup of your community. What type of community do you live in? Because you just stated that you can go across the street to your neighbors and, you know, blah blah. You know, blah. But what's the makeup of your community? What type of community do you?
I have had a neighbor, and she was black. Asked me to come walk in her house with her. The name was Mabel. Of course, it don't make no difference. But, no, we live in a mixed community. But I'm just saying, and he, being that he was lifelong, he understands the possibility of what could have been going down could endanger his life. But it's too late now. The lady is dead. The police officer, what he done, he shouldn't have done it that way.
Yes,
he shouldn't have shot in somebody's house because they showing a gun through a window. That's just crazy. He is guilty of that. He had plenty of time to think about that. It wasn't like he was in immediate danger because she looking through glass, she couldn't probably see him. And it probably was not trying to cause any harm.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, sadly, but it's things that lead up to an incident at some point in the time in the near future that we all are sorry for.
Okay, great. Thank you for calling in tonight, Bianca. Now we're going back to the phone lines. Listen, if you just tuned in, it's almost straight up 8 o'clock almost. Listen, if you just tuned in, I'm sorry I haven't informed you about what we're talking about. We're talking about the Aaron Dean trial. Aaron Dean was found guilty of manslaughter this week, and we're talking about the fact they were in the sentencing phase. And they put probation on the table today, which made a whole bunch of people very nervous. And so we thought 2 to 20. All of a sudden, they were talking probation. So we're not sure if the defense was using some type of strategy where they were going to put you on the low end. So, you know, at least maybe with 20 being at the top of the scale and 2 being at the bottom, if you say probation, then if you fall somewhere in the middle, you're still good. So I'm hoping that that was a strategy and not a serious consideration for anybody. But we're going back to the phone lines. We're going to 682-250. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Good evening. Good evening, Sister Carrie. Yeah, it's been a, Brother Malik, I said it's been a interesting week. Listen to everybody, everything that Mr. Dean, as far as how he's supposed to assess things, when it came to that lady, was all wrong.
Mm.
It was just all wrong. We can't forget the dude was just wrong. He had other options, but he chose not to do options.
Mm-hmm.
What he was, even if the gentleman said, this cat, he got something that ain't right when it comes to following instructions.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, he does have some behavior disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
when it comes to following instructions.
Mm.
So, you know, Gallagher is who he is. You know, he's a cop lover, and we got to accept this. That's just how they are down in at the Tarrant County Judge facility. Can't deny that. You know, y'all act like these folks down there love black folks, man. Y'all need to get off the gas. I see straight through Aaron Dean's mama. I see straight through his sister. I see straight through the whole family. Hate got an odor. Hate got a vibration. And Carrie, you and I old enough to know.
Mm-hmm.
I see straight through them because I've been enough around. I know different types of white folks.
They almost seem like Mormons, didn't they? Didn't they give you the vibe that they may be like Mormons or something? They're very, you know, the way they look and carry themselves.
Oh, yeah, they really reserved, you know.
Mm-hmm.
come off as that I go to the or go to the conservative white church type of folks.
But, you know, I noticed they were able to get under the mother's skin just a little bit when they start asking her about the Bible, what the Bible said about an eye for an eye. You know, she couldn't pretend to be Christian and then not be able to tell you what the Bible really says. And she struggled a little bit to me with those answers about what does the Bible say about an eye for an eye.
But see, what got me, that little smirk, that same little ugly smirk that he got, that same
you know what
smirk, his sister, brother, please.
I don't know if any of y'all caught it, but that
can
first
you let
old
me finish,
lady.
Brother, can you please let me
finish?
That same little ugly smirk his sister had, he didn't do nothing wrong. He didn't do nothing wrong. See, that got up under my skin. And many old movies that we had watched in the narratives that my four parents didn't told me, my grandmother didn't told me, I don't see nothing funny. How could you sit there and smile when a life is lost? There's no remorse in that family. And it's like he did what he was conditioned, what we taught him to do when he come dealing with black folks.
The sister and said so she was a police
officer. We're not going to play like that hate don't exist. Mm-hmm. Even many, many times I've read a lot of tattoos on these police officers' arms. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of hate.
But remember the sister said she, remember the sister said
like
she was a police officer here in DFW somewhere?
I mean, she didn't specify. I don't understand why they didn't make her specify.
No. She's scary.
That part.
I mean, you live in Austin PD, but I think you got to be from Austin PD to work in Austin. I'm a resident. Well, she said if she's from Austin, you ain't going to work too far away from your residence.
Okay. I had a problem with the whole homeschooling thing. It seemed like to me the homeschooling affected his ability, to interact with others. Looks like he was poorly socialized.
Nope.
Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah, that type of move right there with that group right there, it's some good rich folks. Homeschool their kids It just that had to do whatever problem that he had started at home.
But we're talking about he was homeschooled from K to 12, so literally he had no interaction except for maybe going to church or maybe in the neighborhood. If you're homeschooling your child, you know, for that many years.
I don't think he interacted with any of his peers too much because, you know, you didn't see nobody but one person come up there and speak on his behalf other than a relative.
Yeah, character witness.
What about the character witness that said Dean gets started doing something and then he kind of goes, you know, like wanders off in the head or off and doing other things and then he'll come back. At one point he was in the process of doing something, and then they looked up, and he was gone, and then he comes back, you know, as if he's, you know, kind of wandering in a sense.
I can say that whatever going on with him started at the crib. He ain't had no girlfriend come up there and try to testify for him. His best buddy that he grew up with didn't come even the pastor didn't come up there and say nothing on his behalf. Why didn't the pastor come up there and have something to say if he's so good?
Yeah, but what I'm leading to is the fact that when he went through that gate, did he have that same mentality? He went in that backyard. That's the wondering.
Everything when he went in that backyard was a tactical procedure to blind the sister. To draw her out, because he knew that one was gonna come to the sun. Any homeowner gonna come to that window if you shine a light in your, you know, because they, I mean, think over there. She's in the concept of the unknown. You in protective mode. You know what I'm saying? Thing over there is, regardless of what we say and how we think, all this could have been prevented if that man would have did what he was supposed to do.
Not
and that's simple. That sister would still be alive if you didn't have your little ugly ass in that man's backyard. I mean, up under the young lady's backyard. Ain't nobody but her. She's a young lady. And, you know, if you're not from over there in that in that area, you know, that area can be unfriendly. So
Let me jump in right there. Okay, remember the psychologist said that Aaron Dean said that he was, one of his character flaws was that he was messy. He was very messy, and that, you know, that's something he needed to work on. Well, yes. Remember how big of a deal Dean made out of the fact that Tatiana Jefferson's house was so messy? It just almost seems like a total contradiction. So it almost seems like this whole thing is based on a lie as to why he proceeded to go into the backyard and not knock on the front door or ring the doorbell. Because if you say you're messy, then you, one messy person recognizes another messy person, right? So why did that signal you as there was a problem and to proceed further into the backyard?
No, thing over this, Carrie, let's not elude between him and Doris. How many Negroes they've been around in their life socially?
Mm-hmm, probably.
On a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm.
Do they know our culture, how we function, how we go about doing things? They are totally ignorant to how we do things. They see it as one thing.
I agree. So was Fort Worth PD put on trial or was Aaron Dean put on trial? Because sometimes,
It's a combination of both that shows ineffective. For one, he shouldn't have been allowed to be. They shouldn't have hired him. In my personal investigation, he ain't the only one they didn't let slip through the cracks.
Mm.
But see, when it comes when it comes to us, you know, they clamp down because the person that's being interviewed or doing the psych eval don't look like us.
Hmm.
And I had a young man that brain was 10 times above the average. How is it that that young man that's able to go to a good university can't pass the eval test? And those are little ugly, mean-spirited things that Fort Worth PD has been doing to keep a lot of Afro-Americans out of that situation of being police officers. I mean, we gotta understand, man. That's an ugly. I mean, it's just an ugly situation when it comes to a lot of police departments in America. It's governed by the Klan, and always gonna be governed by the Klan, and they ain't gonna turn it loose.
Hey, Carrie, back to the initial call that the law enforcement received. Now, Dortch, if I'm understanding correctly, you all who watched the trial, you know. Thoroughly. Did she say she accepted the call to assist him, or was it vice versa? Because remember,
no, that way.
She called assist.
No, it was Dean's call. She was backing Dean up. Remember,
so,
he said she got there early. Mm-hmm, yeah, but
okay, she got
call.
There early. Okay, that's what I want to get to. Yeah, the point of she got there early, and but it goes back to again to their relationship and. Being in the same class, I feel like with the state allowing the woman that had the issue with Dean in college come forth, it showed a propensity of how he is. For one, he with violating people's space, you know what I'm saying? Violating people's space or feeling he has a sense to something, you know, he has the right to something. For one, for two, that go back to that mentality of I need to show. He took lead on it, remember? I need to show, because they've been partners, so they've been talking about stuff, but this was an opportunity for them to work together, you know, to do something. And he took the lead wanting to show, again, I'm this guy. Y'all got to go back also, remember, Dortch, I don't think wants to go in that backyard. She whispered something to them when he opened that gate, but he disregarded whatever she was saying. I don't feel Dortch wanted to, I don't think she wanted to go in that backyard.
Okay.
She whispered something to him, and he didn't say nothing. He just kind of acknowledged it, but he was already going through the gate. He's already ready to go through the gate. So just factor that in, y'all. She did whisper something to him. I truly don't think, but, again, we don't know because they still went through the process, but she whispered something to him. We know you women think way differently than men. You know, women use a little more caution than men. We look just a little more, let's say, you know, guys a little more, we a little more reckless with ours. So.
The thing of it is, from the residents on the south side that I spoke to, he wasn't popular with them people over there. He was an asshole.
Now we got to go back to these phone lines. Attorney Billy Clark, I wasn't finished with you, so I need you to call back in. But we're going to go back to the phone lines. And listen, if you have a question or comment tonight, the call-in number is 515-605-9321. Then press 1-1 connected. 214-931, thank you for holding. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk What Works.
All right. Hey, Carrie. How's it going?
Oh, it's going.
Yeah. So, I was just picking up on what you all was talking about, and like I said, I believe that Aaron Dean was just really just trying to just, he just got there. He's like a robot. He has no preconceived type of idea of what black people are like other than what they talk about at work. And let's just put it, black people are like brainless sheep out there in his mind, and he's the shepherd. And just the way he approached the whole entire situation, when they said what type of call it was, he said, no, it's got to be a burglary call, because over here, it's a there's a number of burglars and criminals and everything. And then the other thing that I had gotten on Dean was the fact that, you were talking about how he was raised. It just appears to me that recruiting plays a very serious role on this. And the training has a serious role in this. So to answer the question, yes, both Aaron Dean and the Fort Worth PD was on trial. But that's pretty much any other police department. Because you could tell in that interview that he was having when he started the job, they were talking about, would he have a problem killing anybody? He said no. I mean, he's just like a robot. Like, you know, that compute with him or something. And his whole candor in that whole situation is what got him convicted. The fact that he was able to put on those fake bullshit tears like the way Kyle Rittenhouse did when he was in his trial, and the way that those little inbreds down there in Georgia that killed Ahmaud Arbery, they knew how to put on the tears when they got to a certain point. But in the end, their tears was not sincere. Neither was their intent. Their intent was to do what they wanted to do. Right. And that's because all of them got this attitude like they're just supposed to get a gun and go hunting like they're the Terminator. And they feel like they had a mission. Like their mind was just fixed on, this is what we need to do to get rid of those you-know-whos. And that's what got him convicted. You talked about it last week that what was going to be the outcome of the case. I believe that if Aaron Dean had not testified, he would have won. I really believe that because
I disagree. I think when they couldn't get Zion to say that Tatiana Jefferson pointed the gun out the window, which is probably how they had framed the whole case, that Zion was going to get on the stand and he was going to make this statement that Tatiana Jefferson pointed the gun, and so therefore that was going to give him justification for having taken her life that night. However, when Zion could not remember saying that, which makes me wonder, did he ever say it, or was he coerced or whatever? So that makes me question, then the defense was scrambling, and maybe that's why they're coming off as so weak on this back end, is because everything that they had framed for all these years, you know, divine intervention stepped in or something, but it didn't work for Zion to say that his aunt had that gun that night. And so I think Aaron Dean was forced on the stand. I don't think that any defense attorney just puts their person on the stand. I think they tried to, if at all possible, not put them on there. But I think what happened was that Aaron Dean was either fearful that, you know, the way things were going, he needed to do something, and probably his defense team did as well. And so that's why they put him in, you know, like, you know, last-ditch effort. You know, in a game, the coach sends in, you know, somebody, you know, because nobody else is available. And I think that's what happened. That's just my opinion. Don't stick into it. Pianki,
right.
You have another?
But,
yeah. Go ahead.
Right, but I'm just saying that regardless to whatever, regardless of what was the reason for it, that's what basically got this thing into where it is now, because the things that he said on the stand were more incriminating than him just trying to lay out a format of him trying to say everything he did was part of his duty and was self-defense. In that regard, he overspoke, because he said quite a few things that hung him, especially when he started getting combative and started getting getting real tacit with the prosecutor, talking about, well, I could have stayed home. You know, that was very brusque, and he should have never said that.
No, I agree. I mean, you know, I think he got jazzy at one point. I think he did very well when he was testifying for the defense, but when he, under cross-examination, could not handle the pressure, we saw him drinking an awful lot of water and popping his neck and you know, trying to, in my opinion, say to his defense, get him off me. And he kept looking at his defense to the point that the state state's attorney, I'm sorry, Dale Smith said, "Who are you looking at? Who are you looking at?" And he said his attorney. So I think he was in desperate mode.
Hey Ken, real quick. Speaking to what you're saying, y'all also got to remember, Mr. Dean has had the privilege of being not an inmate for the last 3 years. So he hasn't missed a beat in his life. I think more or less him losing his job is still being provided for and taken care of by you know who, gave him another sense of entitlement. And I'm pretty sure they didn't just prepare for this case. They've been preparing for this case. So Dean's desire to sit on that stand, he's built him a sense of, I'm going to get through this. I'm pretty sure they reminded him that Tarrant County has never prosecuted a law enforcement officer. You got to remember, Tarrant County is a conservative county, blah, blah, blah. All this was told to him. You also got to factor in the fact that, it'll come back to me. Oh, last but not least, Dean, oh, goodness gracious, we're talking about Aaron Dean. And I'm just factoring in all the stuff that the fact that, listen, if I was in Dean's state, knowing I'm a cop, and I'm going to just say this on the record, if I was a cop, knowing how they deal with cops in Tarrant County and how cops get up, I would have let the judge make my punishment decision. I would have left it in the jury's hand, because I'm a cop and I know I know the playbook. Not only that, I think he factored in the fact, like, on it's conservative, it's a possibility you might not see, you're gonna see some jurors. He was told all this, y'all. So he got on that stand in confidence. But like you say, Kerry,
there ain't no Negroes in the jury box. That's why he got tried by his peers.
Exactly.
White prosecutor, white defense attorney, white judge, and none Afro-American jury. So it's in his favor. So that's why, I mean, he felt quite confident the way that it was set up.
That part. Listen, y'all, we're
going to feel very betrayed now.
Y'all, we're going back to the phone line. Listen, if you got a question or a comment tonight, the call-in number is 515-605-9321. If you're listening via the internet, the number's at the top of your screen. We're going to go now to 682-235. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
That's Leon Merritt.
Hey, Leon.
Wanted to say, first of all, that, you know, yes, we should have gotten murder, but there's an old saying that you can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And that especially applies in a county where, even to get this result, it took mountain moving prayer.
Mm-hmm. It did.
We saw a historic result here. This is the first time that a cop's actually been convicted for any, you know, killing, wrongful killing they did while on duty. I looked into it. There's been several off-duty ones that kind of happen in the household or whatever, but on duty, and this is a big deal. So, yes, you know, we've made progress, and that's the good news. You always, you know, with you know, the world being how it is, and with my, you know, especially me personally and my life being how it is, you know all about that, Mrs. Hines. You know, I try, I have to, you know, you cling on to any bright spot that you can cling on to. And am I super duper happy with the result? No, but I'm satisfied.
I want to interject on that. I want to interject on that.
Is Dr. Ellen Jefferson satisfied? Is I satisfied?
I want to interject on that.
How can you speak in that matter, bro?
No.
I always want to cushion up when these people do something.
No,
bro.
We're not going to do that. No, he's
murder.
Hey, Mr. Merritt. Mr. Merritt.
Okay, so what?
Mr. Merritt, I just want to say that we are too far along, you know. We are too far along as a society and a history, okay, because I made this point posting online that what this trial is doing is that's what you call gradualism and tokenism. This is token justice. It's a big fat wooden nickel to me. Okay?
And
I'm
it's
not
your
busting
right
on
to
you.
Be
I'm not attacking you, Mr. Merritt. I understand there's a lot of people on both sides, whether you're black or white, they have that mentality. But what I'm saying is we've got people going 12 years to school, learning history, okay, going to college. Dean went to college, okay? We all know, no, we can't go for no more baby steps, man. It's time, and it ain't about race. It's about the court following the law, okay? And the court ain't doing that.
Amen.
It's a token justice.
Right on.
Well, I just choose to have a more positive outlook because when you look at, I mean, think about the numbers, for instance, when it comes to police killings. I remember when I was a kid, one of the first cartoons I was introduced to was Tom and Jerry, the old Tom and Jerry cartoons. Well, if those of y'all who are familiar, think about Mouse in Manhattan. That scene in particular where Jerry gets thrown into a jewelry store window and the cops show up mistaking him for a burglar. And they just immediately start shooting Tommy guns at them. When you look at the raw numbers, and this goes for everybody of any color or whatever, the cops in like the 40s, they're in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, were much more wantonly deadly than they are today. So, you know, yes, that's raw numbers. The cops shot
Man,
a lot more people. Well, hold
you,
on.
You
let
stop,
me finish,
bro.
Please.
You
thank
really
you.
Didn't stop.
Let
money.
Yeah. Let me finish. Thank you.
Money and finish.
Anyway. Goodness me. See, it's just this negativity. People are so today. I don't get it today. Negative, negative, negative. Everything's got to be doom and gloom. I'm going to look at the numbers. I'm going to look at the whole picture. And we are making progress. And progress is to be celebrated because humans are stubborn. So any victories you can get, we need to be happy about it rather than, oh, it wasn't perfect. It wasn't perfect. So let's just all be doom and gloom. We live in America in 2022.
How old are you, Leon?
For real?
30.
No.
Come on.
We're from different time zones. I mean, time, you know, eras, Malik. So
he need to stop. He ain't been on this planet long enough to try to come up there with that type of talk.
No.
Well,
young.
Yes, I have, sir. Thank you.
No.
The
you
thing
sorry,
is
bro,
that,
bro, I'm 20,
and I'm going to finish my point whether you're talking over me or not.
30 years old.
Finish my dang old point. So it's not about age,
kid, bro.
Okay, but if the simple fact is anyone's capable of looking at numbers and stats and saying, wow, we have
Amen.
Made progress and I'm going to be positive today. The Bible tells me to be positive.
Right. And that's what I'm going to do. And the Bible tells me to look at all the facts, ignore the spin, ignore the people trying to sow division and negativity. For instance, okay, think about the reference earlier to Mr. Rittenhouse. A lot of people are unaware of the full story because you have Kenosha, which is a beautiful multicultural town. And, you know, apart from civilized protesters, there was a riotous insurrection going on, a breakdown of law and order. And so a bunch of Kyle's multicultural, multicolor, all range of colors that friends that he has in Kenosha. Okay, come and help defend our town. And that's what he did. And people, like he wasn't like a lot of people think the people he shot were black. No, there were three white insurrectionists trying to set the torch to an Arab American gas station business in a neighborhood with majority minority that these privileged white people were running around doing their little insurrection in. You know, the media didn't give us the full story. The grifters didn't give us the full story, but that's the full story. He supported Andrew Yang, and people are trying to make him out to be some sort of far right winger. And it's all traced right back to the CIA. It's all traced right back to the CIA and the people trying to divide us. And so
they're going to get you, Leon. You know, I think you're probably
too young. What we're going to do is stop this bull crap, man. We disagree with anybody on here that far off, we got to reel them back in, sis.
We have to respect each other's perspective. We all think we
dude,
all.
Dude, did it take you 30 minutes to do that, bro?
No, this Aiden.
Nobody 30 minutes to do that, bro. Say what you got to say, just so we hear other people, bro.
We have to respect each other's perspective. We're having a discussion. That's all we're doing. That's all we're doing.
Testosterone, y'all. Where are the women at tonight, y'all? I'm just like, hey, listen. Thank you, Leon. You know, I know you're probably too young to know what the gong show was, but there was a gong show years ago, and if they get mad at you, they would just start hitting this big old. What was that thing they called? I don't know, but
that big old gong thing, whatever it was.
Yeah. And so I'm just gonna save you from them doing that because they're being too crazy. I'm
about the Will Rogers gong show.
Huh? Did you ever watch the gong show?
Will Rogers. You talking about Will Rogers?
No, this was a TV. This was a TV
show. The gong
show,
the one with the fingers and stuff. Yeah, I'm familiar.
Okay. I'm going to save you from getting that tonight. But we're going to go back to Pianki. Pianki raised his hand again. Yes, sir, Pianki.
You know, as far as age-wise, I'm older than all of you. Some of you are twice as older. But did you say that the lady stuck the gun out the window, or what, did the cop shoot through the glass?
Okay,
you
know,
shot through the glass, bro. I was in the backyard. I know what the sorry white boy did. I was there.
Well,
I walked through the whole scene. And it was some fiery shit that he did, point blank.
He literally said he saw a silhouette that didn't have any hand, and it had a big old gun in it, and he was looking down the barrel of it, and that's
that
what he
shot. What he done, he shouldn't have done that. And if he was going around the back to see if people was coming around out the back door, and the neighbor probably said that the door was open for a long time, my goodness, what were they doing? Roasting hot dogs back there? I would have asked for a car.
They had burned some hamburgers and they were letting the smoke out of the house.
Out the back door or the front door? Front door?
Front
door. And it was a door that was on
what he should have done was ask, but did he have backup there with him?
Well, he didn't follow the protocol.
All right. He was wrong with what he done. I would have called for some backup, and I would have knocked on the front door. I would going around
well,
the back. That
the,
don't make sense.
The state prosecutor that brought in the expert said it's exactly what you said, exactly what he was supposed to do. And time again, the gentleman that the state brought in as their expert said, He just messed up, bro.
Yeah, well,
he was
yeah,
wrong.
It sounds like
wrong,
it. It
wrong,
sounds
wrong.
Like it
everything
up.
That he did was wrong.
Now, let me say this. The ultimate people that's responsible for the actions of the police department is the people of Fort Worth. They're the one that's going to be liable for it, ultimately.
You're right.
So municipalities got to make sure that they have policies in place and that the people that they're hiring is eligible and responsible for the job and not carry a, you know, remember during the time of Mike Brown, I put forth a white paper and said that there should be a national registry where police
mm-hmm.
that have these
mm-hmm.
type of problems, they should be registered
mm-hmm.
on a national registry so that, like you had there with Tamera Rice and
Brady,
they could have looked at the national register and see if this person is on it. And
well,
I'm gonna say something else.
Light there,
real quick. In around 6 in Chicago, where George Floyd got killed, you know, police don't come up in that area. I had an article where the dispatch was talking to a resident who was having a domestic problem, and the dispatcher told the lady, "You're gonna have to meet them about 5 blocks down because they don't come up in that area no more." And that can be, so that's not only, that's detrimental for the people that's law-abiding and expects to have the service that they so need to have. But anyway, I was just wondering when somebody said she stuck her gun out the window. Well, I thought he shot through the glass, and, you know, the gentleman cleared it up. He was wrong from my perspective.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Y'all, let's talk about what happened in court today. That's the elephant in the room.
Oh, Lord, have mercy.
Yeah, listen, okay, how crazy was that? So defense team appears to be running the court today. Aaron Dean's defense
yep.
team appears to be running the court. And so literally they were snitching about who all was in the courtroom. And
mm-hmm.
so they're looking for Manuel Mata. So the judge calls out for Manuel Mata, and Manuel Mata did not respond. So then he points at a young Hispanic man named Anthony LaSalle. And he said, "What's your name?" And LaSalle said, "I'm Anthony LaSalle." He said, what did he ask him? He said something about, "We're going to swear you in to be a witness." And Anthony LaSalle doesn't even know anything about the case. But they were trying to get Manuel Mata, but Anthony LaSalle, I understand, is a local activist. So this isn't the first, the second, or the third activist that they kind of kicked out of the courtroom. So it seems like the strategy is to swear you in, so therefore you can't sit
right.
in the courtroom during the trial. Okay? So a little later,
right.
Manuel Mata goes into the courtroom. And then defense team snitches again to the judge. Manuel Mata is here. And so then the judge asks for Manuel Mata. Manuel Mata stands up. And he tells him, "I'm going to swear you in as a witness." And so Manuel Mata said, "What's going on? I don't understand." And so he said, "I'm going to swear you in, sir. Will you be sworn in?" And Manuel Mata said, "No." The judge then removed the jury.
Huh?
And then he comes to Manuel Mata again and asks him. And Manuel Mata, when he tells him he's going to swear him in, Manuel Mata says, "By whose authority? By whose authority?" We'll figure. And so I think that took it to another level. And that's when the judge said, "Don't you have bonds?" And he said, "Yeah." Okay, somebody's got some noise in my background, please. Okay, so he says to Manuel Mata, "Don't you have some bonds?" And then he told Manuel Mata, "You are therefore, your bonds are therefore revoked and you're under arrest." Now, what kind of circus? That's why I wanted Billy Clark to stay on the line to explain what the heck was that today.
That's what
they
call official oppression, which is unconstitutional without him being subpoenaed or sequestered to court in such a way. It's called official oppression, which everybody on here, which I sent you the application.
Mm-hmm.
This ain't the first time Gallagher, he has a pattern of doing this. That brother didn't do nothing. And Gallagher, mm-hmm. what Gallagher should have done was asked him to leave out the courtroom. When
mm-hmm.
you do things that violate that man's constitution rights as he did, that has been identified as official oppression, and that needs to be reported to the DA's office or the county judge. and Gallagher needs to be removed. He has a pattern. Mm-hmm. Just like he told him to tase that man that time. So he needs to be turned in according to what the attorney that was on the panel today for WFAA, as mm-hmm. Alex, he said, he is totally out of order. It's all over the thread, and he should be investigated on what he did to Manuel, because Manuel did nothing. Because by article of law, you got to tell that man if he committed a crime, what he done. I mean, brother, he didn't do nothing.
You know, let me say this. The majority of us on this phone line know Manuel Mata.
Right.
That said, we know that Manuel Mata is not connected to this case in any way. Manuel Mata did not know James yeah. Smith, nor did he know Tatiana Jefferson's family prior to this ever happening. But we do know this week Manuel Mata stood out in front of the courthouse with James Smith's sign that said justice for Tatiana. So was he labeled for that? Other people are saying that yeah. they are accusing him of screaming at Aaron Dean's family when the mother was saying that they kept
him. He was not around when that transpired. Yeah. I was out there. I know that for a fact. Manny was he was not around when that went down.
That part.
And if you're going to target him, you might as well go and target everybody then.
Exactly.
And that was cool because a brother had a whole, the man that had the hover around had a whole bullhorn.
One at a time, y'all. One at a time.
He had a whole hover around speaking his piece, exercising his constitution right then. And he said whatever he wanted to say. So,
yeah,
the judge is wrong.
He was screaming with a bullhorn.
He had a bullhorn.
Manuel was targeted because he is an advocate and he speaks strongly.
Exactly.
Like Thomas.
Exactly.
Okay. And if Thomas was here, God rest his soul, that he would be up there getting sworn in as well.
Yeah.
So, but by him not assisting them with the fact that, okay, I'm going to be sworn in, but I haven't done anything wrong or I don't know anything pertaining to the case.
Right.
No, I'm not going to submit to you. Then, okay, you strip me of my bond and you arrest me because I won't comply.
And I think if the worst he could have done was giving them contempt of court, but how do you revoke your bond? Because I'm asking you, Manuel asked him several times, what is going on? What is this about? And the judge refused to answer his questions. Y'all listen, it really took me back to like the Jim Crow era where a white person. Say what?
Yeah, that's the way to sign.
I was saying, welcome to Tarrant County.
Yeah.
And I wanna praise Manuel Mata, because this is what we've seen, the same pattern going on. He put up three or four people. He did it to Lee Merritt, and Lee Merritt just went on with that. Okay, sir. Now, and Manuel Mata was totally controlled. I've dealt with him. I know Manuel Mata in some of his videos and stuff, he can be quite animated. But he knows the right gear to be in when he needs to be in the gear. He didn't freaking act up in there. But what it is, that's why I said the racial issue is going to distract. This is an example of what I'm saying, is that it's gone beyond the Rubicon, because we have this Orwellian assault. We are under an Orwellian a regime. This is 1983 in Tarrant County, the book 1983. And this judge, what he did, what we're seeing now, is informed dissident citizens that are coming and asking for the conversation and asking for accountability and asking for transparency. You know what that is? That means the liars, these demon, dishonest people that we have, what we call public servants, they fear the truth being told. That's it.
You know what? It sounds like today.
Hey, Terry.
Say what?
Terry, man, your mother came in and sit down in front of me. And his demeanor was calm. He was a little bit bewildered because of the fact that he didn't know why he had been called in there. Then he was called up there. And that's why he
Wait. You just said something very crucial. Manuel was in the overflow and they called him into the courtroom?
He came in there.
Okay.
They called him in. He sat in front of me. Then they called him up there. And when they called him up there, that's when they went to swear him in. And he didn't want to comply. Mm-hmm. And that's when they
if he was on the outside of that gate,
one at a time, y'all. One at a time.
Based on the seal law, Manuel, the judge really didn't have no jurisdiction. And that's why Manny didn't go inside that gate. Because really that judge had no jurisdiction. When you go inside that gate, you give up your jurisdiction. And all the court, if you look it up, so you see a law, the judge is supposed to tell that man what he did. That's just point blank. The man didn't do nothing, y'all.
I'll tell you the truth. I know the whole story. I know the whole story about how that transpired today because I'm the one that communicated to Manuel Mata about what happened earlier in this morning, and he didn't know about it, okay? And this is what I'm saying. Manuel Mata knows the law. He knows this, and he has the expectation that our public servants and our judges and our system check up. He's trying to check it up. Manuel Mata went up there to call the bluff. We should be standing with him, and like I said, these complaints.
Oh, I stand Manuel with
Mata, he went up there and
we stand with Manuel Mata. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but yeah, we stand with Manuel. Absolutely.
Hey, real quick, I'll say this, you all. I'm gonna just say this real quick. Let's not forget. Terrence kind of knows who Manuel Mata is. Trust me. That them court systems, they know who Manuel Mata is. The police, they know who Manuel Mata is. So somebody down there, they saw opportunity and they took
it.
It's a setup.
Yeah,
sure. From whatever he had to say to the public. That's what that was all about.
I agree. We're going back to the phone lines. Aaron, go ahead, Christian.
What the judge should have done, quite simple, is told Miles Brissette, sit down and shut up.
That's what he was supposed to do. He should have told Miles Brissette to sit down and shut up. And what the analyst said, that this has become a clown show. And he was going in on Gallagher because Gallagher was totally – when it comes to an official of the court, he was totally out of order. And that's what he told us what to do, that official oppression thing is what need to be. Everybody need to be calling the DA's office.
Out of all of the ones that I've seen while sitting in there, if he called up to that gate, the jury is asked to leave. Why was the jury still sitting there?
Because they don't want them to see what they better do when they know it's wrong.
No, they don't want the jury still sitting there. They watched him get arrested.
Oh, did they?
They took him out. And the reason he called up there, he had the jurors go out. And then he do what he do as far as asking them and putting them under the witness. But then when Mata came up there, the jury was still in the box for them to see that whole episode.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah. As soon as he knew that Manuel Mata wasn't going to comply and was going to question his authority, he had to remove the jury. Because that could have been an inflammatory situation, and then the defense could have got a mistrial or whatever.
He didn't remove the jury.
Oh, I see that was a smart move then. Okay, we're going to go back to the phone lines. Listen, y'all, we got about 15 minutes left in this show. If you got a question or a comment, the phone number to call tonight is 515-605-9321. Then press 1 once to make it. We're going to 817-905. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk 4.
Hey, I just wanted to say I do want to thank Manuel Mata because we do, I do stand with you, and we all stand with you. And ever since I met Manuel Mata, he has been he has never changed. And Thomas Fulencasi is looking down, and he is smiling over you because that is something, and he knows his rights. And Gallagher was out of line, and and he is shining light on Tarrant County. And when you don't even have to walk in the room and see anything, but your presence says it all, that says a lot about Manuel.
Mm-hmm.
So, Manuel Mata, I thank you. And this is Tara Rice, Jalen Rice's mother. So,
thank you.
I thank you.
And
I thank you.
Let me ask this. Manuel Mata has been on a lot of newspapers lately. Fort Worth Weekly, and I think Star Telegram. So y'all are exactly right. They knew who Manuel Mata was.
He has
a YouTube channel. He's an auditor and cop watcher. So, you know, and then if you go to Manuel Mata's page from yesterday, he did a video showing that the cops are hiding about 3 blocks down the street from the courthouse deep. And he exposed them, and I think that may have had something to do with it as well. But Judge Gallagher, you know, it's supposed to be your courtroom. I mean, how are you going to let the defense team tell you how to run your courtroom? Something's wrong with that. And I say you can have a right to revoke that man's bonds. I mean, that's why I have not been down there, y'all, during the trial, because I did not want to go to jail because I know I've been very verbal on social media about the trial.
But Manuel takes one for the team every time, and I thank him for that because I got kids I got to make a home to. So when you ask me to leave, I leave respectfully. Even though you out of line asking me to leave because it's a public building, I leave because I have children. Even though I'm fighting for the injustice of my son to this day in Tarrant County, I have children I have to make a home to. And we all have families we have to make a home to. So we can't.
But Manuel should have, in all truthfulness, Manuel should have made it home today, too, because he absolutely, Gerald said he was sitting in front of him. He wasn't doing anything.
Well, the analyst here said that the judge was wrong, and I think the analyst that was on the WFA panel are going to submit some things against Gallagher from what I seen on that panel, because they called it all the way out to the T, and it was some old lawyers that chimed in as they were on that panel as analysts and said that Gallagher, it needs to be a complaint filed against him in the DA's office by his conduct, his misconduct.
This is going to be different than what Gallagher did the last time, because in this case, people don't understand, is we watching this channel on the YouTube, whatever, this, that, whatever, this ain't local. This stream is on Court TV.
That's what I'm talking about. And interestingly, brother, every attorney that chimed in, whether they were on the prosecution side or the defense side, whatever their occupation was, they said that Gallagher was wrong as 2 left shoes.
Okay, and it was Gallagher. He said something. He whispered something to the person next to him or something like that, and they all of a sudden they asked him to come up there, and they swore him in as a witness and had him go out, and that was early this morning.
Wow.
He was the first one.
Cool.
This a Spanish guy.
He was Anthony LaSalle, the one that they thought was Manuel Mata at first.
Anthony ain't said nothing the whole time he's been down there.
They swore him in as a witness, and he doesn't have anything to do with the case.
Right.
No, he got nothing to do with it. Well, that's what the analyst was saying, that Manny had nothing to do with this case, that you taking your personal vendetta out on this man and for nothing and doing something that you know that's not ethically, morally right. And you have turned this into a circus show, quote unquote, from the
analyst. To attest that Manuel didn't even know anything about what was going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Didn't have anything to do with what you was talking about, Malik, as far as following the family and all of that they're saying.
Manuel was not around. I was down there, bro.
Right.
I looked at everything that went on. Emmanuel was not there.
We got two things we want to hit on before we get out of here tonight. First thing, we want to hit on the fact that Chris Nettles and Maddie Parker were, you know, brought up before the judge, you know, like it's a kindergarten, I don't know, for speaking when they knew that they were under a gag order. Now, the problem is the gag order started under Hagerman. And so a lot of people were confused after Hagerman was recused as to whether or not the gag order was even still in place. So Councilman Nettles gets in trouble for that, and so did Maddie Parker. So what are y'all thoughts on that, the fact that they're in trouble?
They're not in trouble.
I think that happened. They started with Nettles today, and I think when Nettles went in there, because they cutting the camera off, there's certain things you're seeing, and I guess if you're in court, you know, I watch it on the Internet. So, but
really?
What I think happened was I think that the judge tried to take a shot over Nettles. And I think when Nettles went in there, I think he put the clap back on Maddie Parker, because Maddie Parker did what she got in trouble for wasn't speaking to the media. She did, her office did a press release yesterday,
mm-hmm.
trying to freaking make peace with the situation and say, take this token, take this freaking wooden nickel and be happy, folks.
Ooh. And maybe, you know what? It could have been some of that too. Election is next year. Let's talk about the last thing, probation. Let's be clear, probation ain't an option.
Nope.
Now, most people have been quiet and ain't rose up yet, but y'all listen, y'all trying to give him probation for a manslaughter, for killing a woman who was in her house and didn't do anything but look out the window. It's going to be problems in Fort Worth. Do y'all agree with that?
I agree with it.
Hey,
let's
be mindful before this show ends. Let's be mindful not to dismiss the progress that's already been made towards justice, because it took us this long to get here. So we don't want to take nothing away from what's been gained. I truly believe y'all know how everything started and how the jury was made up and how we factored all that in, how the prosecution started off their case and how we factored all these thoughts in how it was gonna go. And again, it's turned out a whole lot. Seemed like a whole lot brighter. You know what I'm saying? Remember, it's not how you score, but how you.
Us being critical of the prosecution.
Hold on, brother. Please.
It don't take you all day to give out.
Hold on, please, y'all. See, that's we being dismissive of each other's point of view. See, we all can't think alike. You all, we can't have the same narrow thinking perspective. My thing is this: I'm happy with him getting something. He's got a manslaughter. He's got a conviction. You know what I'm saying? I'm glad. I'm happy for that. You know what I'm saying? It's either murder or manslaughter, right? Intent or recklessness, right?
We're not talking about the verdict, Adrian. We're talking about the sentencing.
Carrie, I'm trying to get to my point. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to get to my point, but y'all cut me off. The probation, listen, I believe the jury is going to finish what they started. I don't see probation, regardless of, but he has to be given an option, because everybody gets that. He has to be given an option. That's the law. The law is structured like that, gave him that option. So I feel in my heart that the jury is going to finish what they started. I don't feel he's going to get probation. So y'all can talk about it, put it on the table. I don't feel he's getting probation.
Okay.
So
I can tell you right now, Adrian, I'm not jumping on you, but I'm following the script. I'm following the script that started with Courtney Johnson. The last three officers that have been busted for felonies and put. You want me to cut off, Carrie?
No. Go ahead.
So the only three officers that have been put on trial in Tarrant County for a felony offense they committed in on duty have been Courtney Johnson, John Romer, and now it's Aaron Dean. This is strike three. What you see, Adrian, what I encourage you to take a look at is this pattern, this cycle that we're in. It's smoke screen, the manslaughter conviction, and the way these things play out, okay, it's not only him getting probation. If the jury doesn't give him over 10 years, 10 or more, or no, if he gets 10 or less from the jury, even if he has to serve 10 or less, he's eligible for an appeal bond, and then he won't. He'll be just like Romer.
No, yeah. I think the analyst said, yeah, if he get, was it? It got to be beyond six. Yeah, it got to be beyond six. You're right, brother.
Gary, just like we spoke, the left on that as far as probation could be just a ploy to be able to get a lesser sentence up under the 10 years.
That's right. You know what? You might be right. You might be right. Let me take one more call. Let me go back to the phone line, y'all. I typically don't take calls this late, but 903-802. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth. 903.
Hi, Ms. Karen. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Can you hear me?
We can.
Okay, good. Okay, so like going back to the manual model thing, you know, this is what Judge Gallagher did that was messed up, you know, and you know, I've always been a supporter of manual, and y'all know that. But when it comes to like what he did was he just opened the door for those two cases, or the, I think it's two that manual model has right now, the two that he has opened. He just opened up a whole big can of worms because what the judge did was violated the Canon 2 code. You know, the Canon 2 code is one of the many codes that the all the judicials are under, all the judges are under. And so, you know, that's what he did. He, 3903, and they just opened that up. You know, so basically the judge is supposed to be, you know, show public, you know, public, what do you call it? What's the word I'm looking for?
Ethics.
Public, public ethics, and you know, that we have confidence. And he just blew that out the water. And good, knowing
so
good and well. And the only reason why I feel like...
Trevor, I'm not understanding. So what does that have to do with his cases that he has pending? What will that do?
What will that do is now he gets to show that the court is biased. Whether Gallagher, he's a judge in those cases or not, it shows that, hey, look, this has just shown the influence inside what my case is going to do. So now he gets to reach to that, you know, and he gets to pull it in to be viable. And so, you know, then it also goes back to abusive official capacity and official compression as well. Because what he did was he just decided, you know what, I'm going to revoke your bond based on what? Well, I mean, you have no facts. You have no nothing. You have no probable cause. You have no warrant. Nothing besides your due process was violated because there was no due process in there. He didn't say, okay, now that you're being charged with something, what am I being charged with? I have the right to face my accuser. You're accusing me of whatever I did in this courtroom that I didn't know, and so you have violated the Sixth Amendment at that point. And if he has a good attorney, they will tear that apart and they will start backing up off of it. They'll be like, you know what, let's dismiss this and let's whitewash. And this only, and I believe the reason why this has happened is because when he was exposing those officers yesterday, you know, he was aggressive. But, you know, I mean, at the same time, I mean, what are we supposed to do when we're seeing these officers violate time after time after time after time? You know, what are we supposed to do? You know, and I back the blue, but I don't back those who are turds. If you're a turd, you should get called exactly what you are. If you're a spade, you should get called just that and be treated as accordingly.
But you know what? If the truth be known, we have seen this trial go on. I think we're in day eight now, where we've seen all kind of bullshit, if I can call it that, where a whole lot of, you know, back and forth and really just a bunch of, you know, teams. They were basically, in my opinion, you know, being very soft on Aaron Dean for the most part. They wouldn't let Ashley Carr fully humanize her sister. You know, they tried to make Zion say that his aunt had the gun in her hand when Zion's testimony was taken under duress when he was 8 years old. And another thing I want to bring up, Zion was 8 years old, and if you go back to the testimony, Zion said two different times, I felt like I was in a dream. He said, I was confused. Now, how are we going to believe the testimony of an 8-year-old who says, I was confused and it felt like I was in a dream? And then you got to remember.
Number one, you should have been signed,
according to Child Protective Services, which should have been monitoring that whole thing. You have to have someone that represents the child. If the parent is not there right then and there, they should have stopped. Until they got a hold of attorney, he didn't know that he was allowed to have attorney. Right. They violated his Miranda rights. If you look at the, I've looked at the filing from the civil side. All the things they violated is in that filing on the federal side. They violated his civil rights, and that's what Tarrant County also got to face is what they did and the way they handled. And traumatized this child, nor did they even make an attempt to even go across the street to get Mr. James involved in the situation when it came to him. The best thing they knew was to take him outside and in his drawers barefoot in 40-degree weather. And so
and
rush him off
what?
To an undisclosed place where to where we don't even know where this cat was.
And we did not
the
hear.
Penal code, if you read
let
the
me,
penal
let me
code,
make point.
What happened was.
Okay, who's got the noise in their background? Can you please mute that, please, whoever that is? Okay.
Oh, yeah, it's 151, start at 001, section 2. That's what they violated.
Let me say this real
quick. What it was aggravated kidnapping and exploitation of a child.
That's exactly what it was.
And y'all listen, when they keep telling us about Zion's testimony at 8, we never saw beginning and end. We saw some chopped up pieces. So we don't know really what was said and how he was coerced into saying that.
Nope.
So in order for
that's
them
right.
to tell us that he said it, they have to chop it up. So you can't
and
tell me that what we got was Zion's testimony when we never saw from beginning to end. So, I mean,
and that law firm in Dallas,
how do we know it wasn't edited?
It was.
Yeah,
it
was
because you never seen him. The film started, we don't never see Zion entering the room.
Nope.
It's no film of him entering that building, which they got cameras. Where did they do? I didn't know that you could show minors like that without parental consent. It's so many things. Like I said, I can't recall off the top of the head, but it's a 25-page filing that the law firm over there in Dallas that's representing this young brother, which the city gonna pay off, the county gonna pay off for it get to that point, because they don't want to incriminate the department. Up under further federal investigations of, and one thing does need to happen is that the DOJ need to get in their business because this is just terrible, and it's been on, it's been going on. Then again, we got to understand, Tiffany Burke said charge him with murder. His superior officer said charge him with murder, investigator. And when he got up under the hot box, up on the investigation, which we ain't never seen that film too much, he quit. Yeah. Not once did, that's what kind of threw me with Dale Smith is, why did you quit, Dean?
I'm going to tell you right now, Zion was the first,
okay,
Zion was the first witness that the
somebody
state put on.
Somebody's got some noise in the background.
Zion was the first witness. And the state walked off the cliff with that right up the bat because I'm going to tell you there's a little technicality here when you're dealing with child, when you're dealing with the child's testimony. It was a forensic interviewer, right?
Correct.
And so this is what the defense is going to say. Whenever you have a forensic interview, just like everybody else, they have to take the jury out, bring the forensic interviewer in to validate her credentials as a forensic interviewer. And they didn't even put her on the stand ever. They just brought Zion, and they played that video. So when they played that interview, that's a court error against the state, and that's going to get him off.
Whoa.
I'm telling you, they did it all day.
Wait a minute. What's going to
get
him off?
Who off?
Yeah.
Because whenever they presented that video, okay, if you've noticed, whenever they put video – and however it was edited, they just put it on there. There was no authentication of that video by the interviewer that needed to come in and say, this is a video taken by this person, by this camera at this time. It's a procedural thing under the code of, under rules of evidence.
See, they're not
right.
going to do that. I'm going to tell you why.
How he's getting off.
What? No,
he ain't getting off.
We ain't going to.
Let me tell you what would have got him off, and Judge Gallagher was kind of smart for this, but at the same time, you know, they're still, you know, they can still appeal and say they withheld evidence, you know, when the whole thing was going on with Manuel Mata, I heard y'all say the judge, you know, told the jury now they go back to the jury box because they didn't want to see what was fitting to happen with Manuel Mata because this is what would have got him off because then the defense can say look. You know, look, they're incompetent, and that incompetent would have got either a mistrial or an appeal for a different trial and moved to a different venue. So it was smart for him to get him out there, but at the same time, it put him in a bad corner, and he picked the lesser of two evils, which was the better evil.
Gotcha. Listen, y'all, we got to get out of here tonight. Just say, dear 396th District Court, Judge Gallagher, probation ain't an option. Anybody in leadership in Fort Worth and Tarrant County, y'all listen, don't let one man get the whole city tore up. It's just not worth it. So I say, and y'all going to mute everybody's phone line right now because somebody's got some noise in the background, and it's throwing me off a little bit. So listen, it's not an option. So let's stop pretending that it is. We're going to hope that that was just the defense trying to, put the bar really low so that they would fall somewhere in the middle. But as far as probation, that is not an option. And please do not allow this whole city to get tore up over one man. As far as Manuel Mata is concerned, free Manuel Mata. He didn't do anything. He asked for clarity as to why he was being asked to be sworn under oath when he knew he wasn't connected in any way to this case. So therefore, he felt like, and I would have too, why would I be sworn in? What are y'all going to do next? So he just asked some basic questions. I don't understand what's going on. Why am I being sworn in? And under what authority can you do this? And for that, his bonds were revoked and he was put under arrest, which most of us feel was unlawful. So we're going to say free Manuel Mata. We're going to say file a complaint on this particular thing because it should not happen like this. I don't know what they're on, but this shouldn't happen like that. So all of those who pretty much know Manuel Mata knows he's a smart man. He does have a lawyer, but at the same time, we need to show him our support. Follow Let's Talk Fort Worth, y'all, on Facebook, because we have kept up with this trial. If we have never done this before like this, but we have definitely kept up with every single day of what's going on in that courtroom, and you can find those updates on our Facebook page. We will be back, y'all, probably before Friday next week. When they come back with the sentencing, we will be back on the air that night to talk about it. So that will probably be more than likely Monday. We'll probably be back to talk about what kind of sentencing they came up with for Aaron Dean. But we're going to say again, probation is not an option. Until then, y'all, good night.